Welcome to Obesity, a Disease, the official Obesity Medicine Association podcast exploring the many facets of the disease of obesity. Obesity, a Disease podcast is brought to you by the Obesity Medicine Association, the clinical leader in obesity medicine.
In A Tale of Two Cities, Charles Dickens wrote, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times." And after a few more contrasts, he ended with, "It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despairs." In some ways, I feel that describes where we are with the treatment of obesity. We have a host of excellent options for treating obesity with more on the way, yet we live in a society that often judges those that undergo bariatric surgery or use anti-obesity medications as having cheated. People are still heavily judged if they have obesity, then judged if they treat it by any other means than diet and exercise. I think the foundation of this shaming behavior is based on a lack of understanding of what obesity is, how it is a disease, and how it needs to be effectively treated. Therein lies the need for those that have a better understanding of obesity to advocate for patients with obesity, to educate the general population, lawmakers, policymakers, insurance companies on what obesity is, and how it needs to be treated like any other disease. Hi, I'm Dr. Nick Pennings, Chair of Family Medicine at the Campbell University School of Osteopathic Medicine, and Executive Director of Clinical Education for the Obesity Medicine Association. And as part of our advocacy podcast series, I'm speaking with Leslie Golden, MD. Leslie, tell us about yourself and how you got involved in advocacy.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me. So I'm Dr. Leslie Golden. I am a family medicine trained obesity medicine physician, and I practice at a private practice that I launched, Weight and Gold Wellness, founded off the idea that no matter what our patient's weight is, they're still worth their weight in gold, right? And I am the new chair of the Obesity Medicine Association's Advocacy Committee, and I teach the University of Wisconsin Family Medicine residents for their obesity medicine elective. And all that to say, you know, over the last decade being a family medicine provider, it's hard to practice family medicine without realizing the impact of obesity on so many of our patients. And as I learned more about obesity medicine and started taking care of patients in that way and seeing if I would just help them focus on that one disease, so many of the other diseases would just improve instead of having to focus on each little area. And it was so amazing to see, and still is every day. But as you illustrated in your story, in your intro, the negative of it is seeing this amazing impact that we can have, but then the next patient that comes in the room may not have access to that same care. And I have this toolbox that I know can be successful, but this person doesn't have access. And day after day, I would say, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And then I started realizing, you know what, as a physician, I can try to do something about this as well too, rather than just apologize to the patient sitting in front of me, and started getting involved in advocacy work.
And as a family physician, I did private practice for 22 years before going into academic medicine, and I saw the same thing. And that was the same inspiration for me to start pursuing obesity medicine, that I saw my patients getting heavier and heavier, and I'm prescribing more and more medications and thinking there has to be a better way here. And now, you know, fast forward over a decade later, seeing the new tools that we have that really are amazing to be able to help patients with obesity, but then still seeing that stigma and bias and the frustration that you describe in working with insurance companies and trying to get a medication that you know will have a life-changing impact on a patient and not being able to prescribe it for them because of cost or coverage. And that really is frustrating. And so that inspires me to try to advocate on patients. But sounds like that's what inspired you to start advocating for obesity medicine as well.
Very much so. You know, being able to see the change in someone's life, and we see it in so many levels with patients when they're treated, their sense of self-worth improve, and you know, their health improves, but also the way they experience the world and the way the world treats them, unfortunately, is different. And I'm glad they get to experience that. But when you see it be so impactful for one patient and then not be able to offer that for the next, is just frustrating. And at least now, since I started working with advocacy and talking to the insurance companies and talking to employers and talking to legislators, at least now when I sit and face those patients, I can say, I'm doing everything I can. You know, here in the room with you, I'm teaching you, I'm empowering you. And I always encourage my patients, hey, they want to hear your stories. They want to hear the representatives, the senators, they want to hear from you as well too. And I try to give them that confidence to be able to advocate for themselves as well. And then I can also make sure they know that it's not just here in the exam room that I'm working for you. I'm working for you outside of here as well.
And so you're engaged in something often referred to as grassroots advocacy. So what is grassroots advocacy and how does that apply to the disease of obesity?
So when a lot of people think of advocacy, we think of like the lobbyists, these big organizations that you know, are working with the senators and the groups in Washington to try to make big change, which is important. But there's also the grassroots advocacy, which is really just the general public, citizens impacted by whichever issue that people are working towards. And in our field in obesity medicine, there's so much opportunity there. Because a lot of our barriers are related to society's perception of obesity as a choice, and not understanding that obesity is a disease process. And that infiltrates every level that we interact with when it comes to making change for our patients. Even at the individual patient level, I talk a lot about internalized weight bias and stigma. And I think it's a significant barrier for a lot of people to advocate for themselves, accept treatment, embrace treatment. Because when we believe that it's still our fault in some way, it makes it very hard to have the confidence to demand the care that you should have access to.
I think that's a great point, and that the dealing with stigma and bias begins with the patient in the room and their own stigma and bias against themselves. And I see that very commonly, that people judge themselves very harshly for their weight and for their struggle with losing weight, for regaining weight. There's a lot of self-judgment around there, which really makes it difficult to treat, because when people are judging themselves and beating themselves up over their weight regain or challenges with weight, then they often turn to coping mechanisms to deal with that stress, which is commonly food, which our society also encourages us to, you know, eat our emotions. And we see that throughout society. You know, when you're a kid, you're told, well, if you're good, you'll get a treat, right? We reward with food. We comfort with food. When someone passes away, everybody brings food, and they're not necessarily bringing the healthiest choices there. And so I think it begins with that patient as well, and then with the community. And I was at a gathering I live in a 55 plus community, and this person was talking about somebody who wasn't at that event and saying, oh yes, did you see they lost 70 pounds? They took that medication, you know, to lose weight. And it was almost like in a critical way. And I'm like, you don't understand that that's just part of a treatment that we would use to treat like any other disease. And so actually one of the things I'm planning on is doing a community information session and talking to our patients about the treatment of obesity and the role of medications in doing that.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And that's one thing that I would like people to understand is advocacy doesn't have to be hard. We think of it as like I need to have all this training to go and be able to talk to a senator. And really, advocacy is just support, right? So especially as obesity medicine providers, there's so much opportunity out there for us to just hold a session at our local library to tell people, why is weight loss so hard? Why is weight maintenance so hard? Share the information to empower the individuals. You can reach out to employers. That's one of my favorite things to do when I see a pattern of a lot of my patients in the same employer and they're getting access denied. I'll reach out to their employer, their HR department, and say, can we have a conversation about how offering these benefits for your employees could benefit you as well as them? And chamber of commerce's, school boards, there's so many opportunities out there to just continue to chip away at the misinformation that's out there. And it doesn't always have to be reaching out to a senator, which can be really intimidating for many people. But if we start small and we focus on education, which as providers, we're naturally, or if we're not naturally, we've developed it over time, good at it. It's what we do all day long. And if we just continue to share that at a larger scale, we're going to influence more and more people with the science that we now have, and they can continue to spread the word.
And as we share that with community, those people in the community are the employers. They are the people who are connected to lawmakers, or they're the voters for the lawmakers. And when they hear those kind of comments from voters, that can have a bigger influence than even an expert speaking in front of a lawmaker itself. So those are, I think, great points that I think we can have an impact within our community. Can you maybe describe some success stories or outcomes you've had from your efforts?
I definitely we have an employer in the area for in that similar example where or that example where I noticed several employees kept getting denied coverage and reached out and what was able to work with the HR department, and they ended up being an organization that's self-insured. So even if they don't have like a drug on formulary, they can choose to make an exception, whether for the individual or for the employees at large. And we were able to work with them to give exceptions to so many patients. And unfortunately, at first they had this idea of like, well, we'll give an exception for a couple patients, and based on their success, we'll expand it. And so it was just an opportunity for additional education of, well, there's individual variation in response. So just because one or two of your employees may not have whatever you define as success doesn't mean this should be excluded to everyone else. So it was multiple opportunities for continued education, but in the end, we were able to get coverage for their employees, and impact a significant amount of people within our community.
Well, that's great. And it sounds like what your goal was just to kind of crack the door open, right? To get your foot in the door, so to speak, and then manage expectations, right? Which is the other thing that is important, that people often have unrealistic or distorted expectations around treatment of obesity. So I think those are some great points. What keeps you motivated? What keeps you doing this?
I think just seeing the change in my patients every day, and the feedback that I get from individuals in the community in general, because I have a social media presence where I'll talk about obesity and I'll give positive messages and help break down bias and stigma, and the feedback that I get from people thanking me for helping them understand, and for the first time ever someone's told them it's not all their fault. Someone's actually listened to them. They feel like someone has understood them. And that gives me all the motivation I need. Are there still days that I get frustrated? Sure, because advocacy, especially at the legislative level, is slow. I remember when I first joined the advocacy committee a few years ago, I was just gung-ho and I thought I was going to be able to change the world in like 1 to 2 months. I was going to get these drugs covered. And I learned very quickly that this is a process you keep chipping away at and you have to celebrate small wins. And I always think of it as trying to apply what I tell my patients on their journey to myself on the advocacy journey. I have to celebrate the small wins, pay attention to the progress, know there are going to be setbacks, but I have to look out for the long plan.
And I think that's why the grassroots component is so important here, that it's really a bottom-up approach more than a top-down, right? You're not going to be able to get that big win at the very top, but you really need to build that base and understanding of obesity and then build a team that will continue to influence the process of change. So what changes do you think are crucial for addressing the obesity epidemic and how can people advocate for them?
I think some of our big targets, I mean, just overall acceptance of obesity as a disease, you know, that's a big one. It's going to take a lot, but I think that's something that's necessary in order to get every layer that we need, insurance, the legislation, the school respect and support, everything that we may potentially need. But then, I mean, there's the Treat and Reduce Obesity Act that would give access to FDA-approved medications and intensive behavioral therapy for Medicare recipients. And we know that most insurances look to Medicare for a guide, and that would increase access. But also, I encourage a lot of my patients and also colleagues to look at other options. Like there are only one or two states in the country that include weight or obesity within their anti-discrimination laws, and that's a big opportunity that people can work for in working with our state governments to make sure our state employees, being a very big employer in every state, have access. So those are all kind of big targets for us in advocacy. But I think a lot of our success is dependent on changing the way we view obesity.
Absolutely. And that, I think that's part of the educational process is understanding the disease process behind obesity. I think that's an essential thing to do. So how can our listeners get involved and what kind of things can they look to do to get involved in advocacy?
Well, on the Obesity Medicine Association website, we do have an advocacy toolkit, which can help people understand the process a little bit more, motivate them. The Obesity Action Coalition has amazing resources and is more than happy to support people in advocacy. But beyond that, I just ask. I think the biggest opportunity is if you see an opportunity or you're presented with a scenario that you feel like education could improve the situation, be confident and move forward with doing something about it, kind of like what you described. You know, if you're out in the community and someone makes a statement that seems clear that they don't understand obesity as a disease or they don't understand weight bias or they're practicing weight bias and stigma, it's an opportunity, whether it's just informing that patient or that person in a conversation or trying to find out how you can hold an event or provide more education in the scenario.
And so what I hear is we should start with our patients. We should reach out to our community. We should work with our employers and policymakers, and we should be looking for opportunities to talk to our lawmakers if that comes available to us. But still, there's a lot to do even before doing that. So I think those are some great points. Well, I think it's been a very interesting discussion, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast and an opportunity to talk about what is really a very important topic for obesity medicine for our patients with obesity.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Obesity, a Disease. For more information about obesity medicine podcasts and other valuable resources from the clinical leaders in obesity medicine, please visit www.obesitymedicine.org/podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode and want to listen regularly, head over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and leave us a much appreciated review. The views expressed in this episode are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent the opinions, beliefs, or policies of the Obesity Medicine Association or its members. Please join us again for our next episode of Obesity, a Disease.